This podcast is proudly sponsored by David Rabago Family Chiropractic. We fondly refer to our chiropractor as Dr. Dave, who is an ambassador of good competition and an active member of our jiu-jitsu community for the past 10 years. For sports injuries, think Rabago Chiropractic, where soft tissue injuries respond quickly with chiropractic care so you can keep on training. Dr. Rabago is conveniently located near Arden Mall at 1860 Howe Avenue, number 435. Give him a call at 916-568-6333 so you can give it your all on the mat. And don't forget to tell him Jabron sent you. In jiu-jitsu, as a reminder, don't ask what your podcast can do for you, ask what you can do for your podcast. Today's the blue belt panel, so the idea is to just sort of go through all the different levels of development in jiu-jitsu and just stop along the way and chat with people that are there, talk about the journey so far, what they're looking forward to, and what they think that they need to reach that next level. So we've got Katie Dees.
Hello.
With Half Gracie Sacramento. Is that right? Mitchell Torres, Cassio Wernick.
That's right.
And in SEMA, say your last name for me that I don't want to butcher.
Yi Yang.
Yes, I can't
say. It's difficult.
That's a pretty name.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So who wants to go first? You guys want to introduce yourselves a little bit? Just talk about how you got into jits.
My name is Katie Dees, and I've been training jiu-jitsu probably about 4.5 years, I guess.
Okay.
Three years white belt, and just recently, within the last year, blue belt. Lots of tournaments and lots of hours training.
Very cool. Did anything change for you from white to blue?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Well, I'm competing more as a blue belt than I did a white belt. I'm growing a lot more, for sure. I'm learning a lot more. Just spending a lot more time on the mat.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Mitchell, how about you? You've been doing it for a little while.
Oh, man, I'm probably the longest blue belt on planet Earth right now.
You are the garage jiu-jitsu.
That's the rumor.
Champion of Sacramento.
That's the rumor. Actually, of Los Baños, California, the valley.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there's nobody training jiu-jitsu out there, really.
Post a picture of the garage. It's like, this is where we trained.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Yeah, no, I've been a blue belt for a long time, mostly because of not training so much, not consistent.
Like inconsistencies?
Yes, exactly. Plus, my wife kept moving for work, so I'd go to a different gym, a different state. And this is the most consistent I've been, and I'm trying not to let go of it right now.
Okay.
I'm trying to stay motivated.
How long have you been consistent for?
About 8 months solid right now. So that's 5 to 6 days a week.
Make or break now. If you get to like a year and a half, you're going to keep the habit.
Oh, yeah. Plus the gym's 2 miles away from my house, so it's perfect. Let's do this.
You're out in Roseville?
Yes, I am.
Cool. What do you do?
I'm an electrician.
No shit.
Yes, sir.
IBEW?
Nah, just regular stuff. I'm a apprentice. I came on. I do a commercial.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah. My sister's husband. So in English in Spanish we just say suegro.
Yeah.
Which just means like married. Married into the family. Doesn't. Brother-in-law is kind of he's not a brother to me. He's my sister's husband.
Right.
He's like a brother. We're getting close. I love the guy, but he's an IBEW guy.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool. They have him like every 8 months or every year. He has like a new job, right? So he was with a big company in San Diego. They were just like they're like prefabricating the electrical guts for like big skyscrapers.
Right.
He thought that was super interesting.
That is interesting, but man, that workload will take a toll on you doing big stuff like that.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. Yeah. And so now he's like at this job site. It's all like mobile homes.
Okay.
And it's like bringing all the homes up to compliance, and so it's like every day they have to do like however many homes, and then they can get out. But he was saying it's interesting because like with the big skyscrapers, it's all like neatly planned out,
footprints,
and then with the mobile homes, it's like where your entryway is into the house, there's a fucking toilet there or something.
Right,
you kind of gotta like improvise and like.
Well, yeah, who knows when all that stuff was built too? Different years, different codes. You gotta go back and troubleshoot through half that stuff.
Yeah, he was saying it's like they're both like different types of puzzles.
Oh yeah,
yeah, the electrical stuff is randomly really interesting to me because I share that with him. How about you, Insane? How long have you been training?
2 years and 3 months now.
Okay.
Yeah.
What made you get into it?
So I played soccer all my life, oddly enough. I played from like 6 to 20. And I got played for Sac State. I got injured there. And then from there, like, I just kept doing like the bodybuilding and powerlifting type deal.
Yeah, I was going to say you've been doing your pull-ups.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been eating my, doing my pull-ups. Huh? Wheaties, yes. Oh. But nothing really ever compared to like allowing me to use my athleticism when it came to powerlifting or bodybuilding, because they didn't let me like use my body like I used to when I played soccer. So a friend of mine 2.5 years ago was like, why don't you try out like, you know, some kind of martial art? I was like, I don't know what I could do that would go well with lifting. And she suggested jiu-jitsu. And then I went to Cassio's class, saw it. I signed up on that day. I got a loaner gi from somebody and I've caught that bug.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How does jiu-jitsu fit with lifting? So I've been, you wouldn't believe it, but I've been lifting.
You look, dude, no, you look fit. Don't.
I'm not like you, man. You think you're doing good in the gym, and then SEMA, you know, comes over and is like, shit, I got a ways to go. It's kind of like when you're like, get ragdolled by another grappler, and you're like, man, I thought I was past the point of getting ragdolled, and the truth is you never are.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
always someone out there that'll fuck you up.
Substantially smaller than me, too. I got, like, tapped, I think, 2 weeks ago, 3 times in 6 minutes by a 170-pound brown belt. Julian.
Oh, wow. You know Julian? Yeah, he'll do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it just reminds me, I know nothing. I know nothing.
So let me stay on this for a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I've been... So my grappling background is in... is in high school and college wrestling. And in that context, you know, you sort of have a regular ebb and flow. You have seasons, right? So you have like 6 months to get your body ready for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so you put on a little weight, you bulk up, you kind of develop this like armor. And then as the wrestling season goes on, the armor kind of starts degrading over time, right? Because you're doing, you know, penetration steps and you're bending shit in directions it doesn't belong. And like, that can't be good for, you know, your body adapts to whatever you have it doing, right? And when you have it bending in directions it doesn't belong, it's going to naturally let go some bone density and some muscle density. It was always kind of my view of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I took 6 months off to remember the old days, and I did just lifting and just running and kind of getting fit. And now I'm trying to get back into it. And I feel like this week I went to jits every day of the week. I feel like I can literally feel my muscle shrinking. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I kind of get
like
what
your body doesn't want to be buff and mm-hmm. do jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What do you...
It's all about frequency. So okay. You said you went to jiu-jitsu every single day this week, right?
Yeah.
So maybe 6 or 7 days. I don't know how much you lifted within those days. But for me, I'll do jiu-jitsu sometimes 5 times a week, sometimes 4, usually 4 to 5 times a week. And I'll lift 3 times a week. Now, my priority right now is getting better on the mats. I want to, like, I used to be 265. Now I'm 240 because I want, like, I purposely did that because I want it to be quicker and I want it to be faster.
Right.
And this is where I'm chilling right now. But I can still progress because I only lift around 3 times a week. And, like, that's kind of my job. I coach people for that.
Yeah,
so I kind of know how to manipulate what I do in the gym, manipulate my nutrition so I'm eating enough for all the expenditure I have when I do jiu-jitsu and when I'm lifting so that I'm not losing too much muscle now. Because if I were doing jiu-jitsu 7 days a week and not eating enough and not lifting at all, I would go down to like 220, 215.
Right.
It would happen.
Like immediately. And then from there, even more.
Maybe. It would take a few months, but like, yeah, I would lose a lot of muscle mass if I didn't keep doing some type of lifting within what I do.
Yeah. So for, I just want to stay on this for a little bit because I'm just interested in it. So for,
it's all good.
For grappling, you know, typically for like a traditional weightlifting plan would be like pushing, pulling legs,
mm-hmm.
you know, or like, you know, complementary body parts, right? Like chest and triceps and all that stuff, right? And
yeah.
Back and biceps. Would you break it up the same way for jiu-jitsu, or would you do like a whole body type of deal? Would you do more like dynamic stuff like kettlebells? What?
So it depends on the person, their experience, and what they're trying to do. If it's like someone who hasn't been lifting for a long time, like say, let's say they don't have much experience in the gym, then it could be something where they're lifting 2 days a week, two full body days. And it wouldn't be things like, you know, bodybuilders spend 1 day doing biceps, 1 day doing chest. That doesn't work for martial artists because they can't like spend that many days in the gym. So they have to first off do full body days. It's also really beneficial to like concentrate on certain compound movements like squatting and benching, because they can hit more muscle groups than just like your chest. Like a bench press can hit your chest, your shoulders, partially your back. A squat will hit your hamstrings, your glutes, your quads, like all of that, along with helping you stabilize your core because you have to stay upright. And then some smaller movements within that so they can gain muscle as they're doing the grappling deal. But they have to be in the gym like a minimal two times a week. They have to be eating enough. And ideally, that will be enough stimulus for a newer athlete to be able to gain muscle, progress on the mats because jiu-jitsu is, or whatever they're doing is still their main focus. And do that at the same time. Now, if it's someone more experienced like yourself, who is grappling, let's say 6 times a week, then maybe one your off day that you're not training, that's one of the days you train, and then you might have a double day. Like you might have a day where you grapple first, or ideally you go to the gym first and then you go and roll, because what you do in the gym probably won't affect your rolling that much, but your rolling, because of how much you do on the mats, is going to affect what you do with the gym.
Yeah, I try to lift after rolling, and I just feel dry.
Feel like jello.
Yeah. It's just not there. I almost feel like I'm gonna get hurt.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I don't feel so like tired. I'm gonna get hurt after rolling and lifting. You know? I mean, like if I lift and then roll, I don't feel like I'm gonna get hurt rolling.
Yeah.
But if I roll and then try to lift, I just feel like my, and then you know, because like the sweat is evaporating off your body, so you kind of cool down, and you're trying to like lift cold.
Yeah.
Like it's a non-starter for me.
Oh yeah, no, I totally get it. That's why lift first usually works better, and then rolling after that, because you'll feel a little bit tired, but you're so used to what you do on the mats already that it's not going to affect it that much. But in the gym, that's kind of like, it's not something you do as often, so you need to make sure that you're prepared to actually do that type of work.
Got it.
Yeah. And then I'd say, like, just lastly, the biggest deal is eating enough, because all of us, we do a lot of work on the mats. We burn a lot of calories.
Yeah.
And the big thing with the majority of athletes, not just athletes that do jiu-jitsu, but athletes in general, is not eating enough food for performance. So now if you're going to do jiu-jitsu and you're going to lift at the same time and you're not eating enough food, don't think you're going to gain any type of muscle at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I feel like I eat enough, but it's like, I feel like I eat enough Sour Patch Kids. You know, I'm eating enough like cake and eating enough like beef jerky.
Yeah. That's me. You know? I got the worst diet, man.
Really?
Pizza and burgers. Eh?
Hey, but look at you. You're still
slim, man.
Jacked.
You look right. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know about that, but
everyone at this table looks right. You know, jiu-jitsu will do that for you, right? It'll keep you basically looking right.
Right.
You know, you mentioned you have 3 children. You're married.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure you have plenty of constraints on your time.
Just one.
Myself, yeah. I'm married as well. So, you know, with myself, I'm a 9-to-5 guy, you know, which really means I'm getting ready at 7:30 to be done around 5:30. And then jiu-jitsu at 6 to about 8, which means I don't get home till about 8:30. Haven't eaten until about 9.
Yeah.
You know, get an hour with my wife before she goes to bed. This takes a toll on your relationships and your ability to be like a full person,
right,
off the mat. How do you guys balance that? I mean, are you guys 9-to-5ers as well? Does that sound about right for you guys?
Yeah, or? My day starts at 4:30 in the morning, and then I get home about 4.
Keep talking. I'm just going to make sure we're doing good here.
Shower, try to eat something, get to class, roll. My wife usually gets home about 6. I get home about 7, you know, 7:30. So, man, that little bit of time we have together, it's all conversation. So, luckily, she understands and she's supportive. I mean, I have buddies that they're not in the same boat, man. They get an earful about not being there, you know. So, luckily, I have someone that supports and motivates me to do that stuff.
Yeah. How about you, Katie?
Well,
actually, can I have you scoot over just a little bit?
Yeah, I have 3 kids, and they actually all 3 train jiu-jitsu as well. So when I'm not working full-time, my retail job, by the way.
What do
you
do?
I work at IKEA.
Oh, cool.
So it's, you know, not Monday through Friday. I work the weekends and a lot of late shifts, unfortunately. But when I'm not there, I'm at the gym with my kids. They're training or I'm training. So we make it as important as a family thing, and we're always there.
So for you all, it has to be like an all-encompassing lifestyle, or it wouldn't really work out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a good thing. They love it. So.
How old are they? How old are your kids?
I have a soon-to-be 10-year-old, and I have a set of twins who are 7. So, yeah, we're busy.
Boys, girls?
2 girls and a boy. The twins are a boy and girl.
Any thought to put them in, like, high school and middle school wrestling, or?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. My son, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting, like, the, like, not a lot of folks do jiu-jitsu before wrestling. The progression is usually, oh, I wrestled in high school and college, and then as an old man or woman, I found jiu-jitsu, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's more of like a lower impact sport. I mean, it's still pretty high impact, right? It's not easy, but it's definitely lower impact than like wrestling. I think there'd be a lot of benefits to starting with like a jiu-jitsu background and then going to wrestling and kind of thinking about wrestling, I think, a little bit more systematically. Did any of you all wrestle in high school or college?
I wish.
Yeah, no, I didn't.
Yeah, so I've been helping coach, well, the season's over now, but I've been helping to coach my wife's son's wrestling team. I'm trying to bond with him, you know. And, you know, I wrestled in high school and college as well. And I'd been sort of removed from that scene for like 10 years now. And, you know, when I first started wrestling, I kind of looked at jiu-jitsu. I was like, man, these should be run more like wrestling practices. You know, there should be a hard conditioning session after rolling. There should be a pretty hard warm-up as well. Basically, there should be 40 minutes of conditioning. The drilling is different. The situation, you know, live goes are different. But now that I look back with, like, my jiu-jitsu perspective, I feel like a lot of wrestling rooms are just, like, kind of banging their head against the wall for a really long time.
Right.
You know, the level of instruction and the level of attention to detail is just not nearly the same. You know, if you talk to like a wrestler and just talk to him about like taking the back from a head and arm, he'd be like, well, look, if I just put my arm by his armpit, like his arms can no longer occupy that space because my arm is there. So systematically, I know that I can now pass, you know. Whereas like in a high school wrestling room, it's like, all right, like just squeeze you real tight and you know, run your feet and try to get around. It's like, no, it's like, let's sort of like hack this a little bit, right? Like, let's think about it as like a puzzle or something and how to, you know? So I think children with like a little bit of a jiu-jitsu mindset taken to a wrestling room could have tremendous success.
Oh yeah. My nephew, he started out wrestling.
Yeah.
He wasn't that good at it at all. Then he started doing jiu-jitsu. And he got really good at jiu-jitsu quick for being, you know, 13 years old. And now he goes back to wrestling camp, and he's like a new person out there. He's like, he's so aggressive. He looks like he's been wrestling way longer than he has. But I think it came from just his mat time and being comfortable in bad situations and scrambling to get up to these positions. It's a trip watching that kid, man, from nothing, to, from being so, I don't want to, he might be listening, from not being up to par to looking like a killer, you know?
Yeah, was a part of it was like he was just growing too, or?
You know, he was a real skinny kid playing video games all day long. His dad was on it, you know, said, if you want to do this, we're gonna make commitments and we're going to follow through. And, you know, so one commitment to the next commitment, and now he goes to Stanford wrestling camps trying to get, you know, he's like, the kid is a stud now. He's not the same kid he was 2 years ago.
Let me tell you, man, those wrestling camps are no joke. I did them every year in high school, and I did two of them in college. Oh, they were more like technical clinics at that point. They're past the point of yelling at you. But those high school wrestling camps are no joke, man. They pride themselves on how many kids quit.
Right.
You know, like the Jay Robinson and like Camp of Champs. They'll do like a mile buddy run, but someone's gotta be on the other person's back the whole time. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's like that can't be good for you.
That's right? No,
like,
that can't be good for you.
Wait, you don't
do that on your warm-ups?
Jeez, for a mile?
Oh my god!
No, it's like that can't be good for you. But like, and this is what I'm talking about. Like the wrestling culture, just like banging their head against the wall, right? They did another one where they would give I remember they gave us a 45-pound plate. The old ones that had like that lip on them, and that you try to grab them by lip, not the new ones with like the handles on them. So they'd give two of us like a 45-pound plate, and between the two of us, we have to like hold onto it and like run a mile together,
Damn
you man. Know, to like strengthen your forearms.
I bet it.
But dropped it a lot of people dropped it on their toes. Yeah, you know, that's not, there goes that's not good for you. You know, and then they did the dorms that we were staying at were a mile away from the gym, and if they caught you walking it, they'd send you home. And we had three practices a day, so it was 6 miles a day. Damn. On top of,
wow.
So we had the lifting at 5 a.m, the three practices a day for 2 weeks. You know, I mean, there's no way that can be good for you, right? Your cortisol. I mean, what do you think, right? Like,
I get the whole grit and perseverance aspect of it. Like, and how old are these kids, by the way?
Oh, I mean, high school freshmen.
Yeah, yeah. So I get that, you know, trying to teach that. But other than that, this just all seems really dumb. Like, it just seems really unhealthy. And that's why majority of kids quit in that aspect. That's just, I understand the reasoning, but just the application's horrible.
But are you glad you went through it?
Man, you know what? When I went through it, it's like, so we did it. Yeah. Like something just happened. Something transformative happened in my mind when we went through it. Cause I definitely thought I was going to quit.
Right.
I called my mom and she was like, honey, you have no idea how much we saved for this. And she was like, you know, she's like, you're not, it's not like we're like rich parents sending you. Like, it's like, I'm not picking you up. You know, you can
suffer through it.
Yeah. But I saw other kids who, like were just not, you know, it was like kind of killing their spirit for wrestling a little bit even, you know. And
how many kids really want to do it that are not being peer pressured in by
their parents, brother, man?
You know, that's a hard thing.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, like, I would want my kids to wrestle, but you kind of have to like walk a fine line with children because they can't reason, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. you have to make them fear you. And then as they are able to reason, you substitute fear for respect.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, but I saw a lot of parents that never left from the fear mode. Damn. You know, just like dropping their kids off and the kids are scared to death. There's nothing
worse than seeing that parent on the sideline going crazy at a kid, man. That's the worst thing, I think.
Yeah. Hey, so you mentioned like kind of seeing a kid maybe not be up to par and then watching him transform. Right. Did you guys feel any of that in yourselves?
Yeah, actually, I do. I mean, maybe about...
Mitchell, if I can get you to talk.
Oh, yeah. So, like, when I first started training, I was just training because it wasn't even jiu-jitsu. It was just submission wrestling and punching and get back up, you know, because there was no jiu-jitsu school where I lived.
Was it more like an MMA thing?
It was an MMA thing, and I just wanted to fight. That's it. I didn't want to do jiu-jitsu, and plus the guy that was coaching me was telling me, you don't want to do jiu-jitsu, man. It's like a cult. You know, I'm like, well, I mean, I believed it. You know, there was no jiu-jitsu around me. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to train in my shorts and try to get back up and ankle lock somebody one time. And then when I went to my first jiu-jitsu school, man, oh, rude awakening. The instructor was a brown belt. And, man, I've never been tossed in the air so many times. The pressure, I never felt that type of pressure, you know. And that was like, damn it. All right, and then went away back to the story. So, yeah, I thought I was getting good. And then... get smashed by blue belts, purple belts. Like, oh man, do I even want? I started going just to go, just so I could say, at least I made it. You know, at least I made it through these classes. And then eventually, you just get used to that pressure, and then you start finding things that work for you. And you start, well, for me, you know, I didn't always have instruction, like criticism, up until recently. No one gave me constructive criticism really until recently. So I would try to piece my own things together, and I started finding it myself, like, oh, I'm getting good at this, I'm getting good at this. And now with like Casio, telling me like do this better, it gives me this fuel, man, like I've never had. So
yeah, and I don't, and I you probably, feel yourself getting better.
I do, honestly do.
Yeah.
And for years I haven't felt that. I was just going through the motions of going to jiu-jitsu, you know, and
just getting your ass beat.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Katie, have you felt that, like, sort of that feeling of like, oh wow, I'm up to par now? Or
you know, it's funny because you were talking about weightlifting, and I would say I just started picking it up about 2 months back, and I've noticed a huge difference in my game. Stronger, I can last longer rounds, and I think I'm training about 4 to 5 days a week and lifting 2 days a week, and it's perfect.
How do you split it up?
It's hard.
Just as you can. Just
it's
as you
hard.
Can.
Yeah. So if I work late, I go early in the morning.
Got it.
You know... yeah, it's a challenge, you know, but I'm making it work right now. thankful. I mean, I have the gym, so I can take my kids with me, so it's not, you know, that big of a deal. But yeah, I'm just eating enough food, and now I'm feeling great. It's amazing. I had no idea. I felt so much better.
Yeah.
So I was like, I got to do something, because I felt like my game just wasn't changing. I had many private lessons and, you know, stayed longer and, you know, tried new moves, and just nothing really helped. And then as soon as I started lifting weights, man,
that's
incredible. And
that's
then
awesome.
Eating a whole lot more and gaining weight. And that's frustrating because it puts you in a whole other, you know, weight bracket. But whatever, I guess try higher weight bracket.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was 30 pounds lighter 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And part of that was doing just jits for the longest time. And then coming home and be like, oh, I'll have, you know, a salad for dinner. But then I was just bones. I didn't look good. You know, I didn't look good. I didn't feel good. I was getting injured more. And then when I started, I have patellar tendonitis on my left knee. So I started squatting and then progressively heavier and heavier. And that's done wonders for my knee. It's like strengthening the eccentric muscles.
Yeah.
You know?
That's good.
But yeah, I've definitely felt, like my movement changes as I put on the weight, you know? So, my butterfly is still there, you know, my guard is still there, but I'm a lot heavier now. I'm a lot more like smashing now. One thing that that's just, sorry, just a quick aside. One thing that I wanted to talk to you guys about was sort of like technique epiphanies. When I turned from white to blue, one of the big things that opened up in my mind, one of the big kind of like light bulbs that went off was, keeping side control. Cause I was just keeping side control like a wrestler. I was just like squeezing onto the head real good. And, you know, but I had no notion of, wait a second, these legs are going to come into the party. You know, this guy's going to shrimp. This guy's going to move his hips away because, you know, for the guy on bottom, that actually puts you flatter on your back, which you would never do in a wrestling context. So the wrestlers don't actually know how to keep side control until they kind of like play with jiu-jitsu side control a little bit, you know. But I eventually started realizing, oh, wait, like if he's turning his hips towards me, I can kind of take his back. Or if he's trying to like pummel underneath me, I can put my fist in his armpit and keep him from kind of moving down the mat that way because now I have a post there. I just sort of developed this like system for keeping side control. And once I got the side control, it was like pretty hard to leave, you know? And then that opened up a lot of things because now that I was keeping side control, it made it more possible to mount people. Really, I enjoyed submitting people from side control. I think it's the best pin, frankly. Reverse arm bars, north-south chokes, everything kind of like came from side control. And then like that was just like this like thing that like went off in my head. And that's about when I got my blue belt. Did you all have like a signature move that you developed and kind of like helped you make that jump?
That's a hard one. Well, my top game is way better than my off my back. And so I was always in side control, always on in mount. That's where I prefer to be. But now every class, 95% of the time, I'm on my back, just working my guard, my butterfly, and my especially my X guard.
Just making it happen.
Yeah, just I try to make in one move. Like they don't even go together. I don't have no system. It's just like a de la Hiva to an X guard that worked for me. I started piecing together things together that worked for me, particularly because I have a weak side sometimes and a strong side sometimes. It's never the same on both sides. So I just started making these little things happen for me. But yeah, once I started playing with the guard and the X guard, it's like, man, that's where I felt like I made that transition. Because before,
now you can hang out on your back.
Yeah, now I can hang out on my back. Before, I would just get on top and wait it out or look for something. But most of the time, I was always tired, so I'd wait it out, you know? Like, they weren't going to sweep me, but now I'm like, okay, I'll play my back, play some weird stuff that I never thought I'd play before.
How do you sweep folks off the X guard?
X guard, oh man, that's like my favorite. So actually, I like jumping in the X guard, getting that leg on my shoulder.
Yeah, and kind of technical stand-up.
Yeah, well, that's my favorite, the kick out and the stand-up, or popping it over the other side and using my hook to create the back, to take the back. Those are my two favorite sweeps from that position.
Yeah, I like the stand-up from the X-Guard
a lot.
Really good for a wrestler.
Yeah, it feels good, especially when you give that little extra kick and you
can
pop
see
up
him
with
stretch
it.
Out, yeah.
That's my favorite stuff right there.
Cool.
I think, though, for me at least, as a bigger guy, I realized this like 5 months in as white belt, and everyone told me when I compete with other bigger athletes, most of them are not going to know how to, you know, work from their back, because in training they're always on top. Usually, even if they're white belt, they're going to find a way to be on top of like the 180 or 170 guy. So Yeah, exactly. So yep,
that's totally true.
Mm-hmm. So when I was like, even still now, I was always just trying to work from disadvantageous positions, because when I roll with people, if it's a blue belt and they're even 200, 210 pounds or whatever, I'm still going to try and we're going to work for like from ground, but if they're able to get on top of me in like side control, or, if I end up in half guard or something, I'm going to try and work that position without trying to muscle things. For me, that was one of the harder things to get rid of, trying to muscle things. A lot of black belts would tell me, yeah, you can use your strength, but learn how to roll without depending on it that much, because it's always going to be there. But if you can get used to techniquing things and learning how to use technique, then when it does come time to use your strength, then it'll be beneficial. So for me, my focus right now is still like sweeps from close guard, submissions from close guard, working on my half guard, which is horrible. Guard passing for me is something that came a little bit naturally versus being on my back. I think the main shift for me was, if like a guy that's 170 pounds gets me in side control, could I bench press him off me? Yes. Will I? No. If he's getting a submission and I can't escape it by, you know, trying to use some type of technique, then I'll let him submit me. I won't let him, but the submission's going to come without me just pushing him off of me. So yeah. I think that's just like a big guy struggle, because we can't roll with a lot of guys that are like 230, 240, 250. And the only time we really get that is either I do have some trading partners at Casio's that are, but not that many. So it's in tournaments where I'll get a lot of that.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the guys your size aren't going to be as physically gifted either. Right. I mean, just being honest. Yeah. Right. So, you're probably quite a bit stronger than most 245 pound guys. Right? Yeah. And you're probably quite a bit more athletic, right? There's not, because you have like the level. Yeah, I mean, you have the musculature and the ripness of a 150 pound guy, just a lot bigger. And so, mm-hmm. like, typically, as people get bigger, they get bigger and stronger, but their proportions are fucked up.
Yeah.
And so that's, yeah, man, you should compete, man. You'd be smashing guys.
No, I have. I did a lot of competitions as a white belt. I think 7.
I'm sure that was a treat for a lot of people.
It was cool. I this guy's in your bracket. No, it was cool. Like, that's what, like, I think another shift happened when I started competing. I was mentioning it to her that after my first competition, I started actually just looking for more submissions when I spar. Like, it's like I'd see more, just because now I'm like I have to submit you. I can't just hold you in side control or just keep you in mount. I have to find a way to submit you, and I just go for things and get them, because now I kind of have that want to like actually submit my opponent, not just hold them somewhere.
Yeah.
I wish I could train like that. I have, that's my problem. I can't hunt like I want to. I'm always thinking about the struggle of because sometimes I roll a lot of white belts too, so I'm like, I don't want to shut these dudes down. I don't want to make them feel bad, and I don't want to neglect my style too at the same time. So it's like, that's my issue right there. You know, just,
I actually recommend smashing white belts.
I've been told that. I really do. I'm like, man.
So I mean, I think I've got a Mikey. This one's for you, actually. I got a buddy of mine who I feel like is, you guys know Mike Hothy.
Yes.
He's amazing, right? He's a great guy. Really good guy, really tenacious. He has kind of like a quiver of like probably like 5 to 6 moves off half guard and then just a couple of submissions, but they're really good. They're like really, really tight. And so what he does is he kind of tries one setup and one entry might not work, tries the other one, and then the different setups will set each other up, you know. But he's fundamentally like always looking for one or two moves, and he's, I think, struggled in competition because it's, once you kind of figure that out, you don't have to be as good as he is to shut it down, because it's not, you know what I mean. So what I said to him was like, take a blue belt or a white belt or a purple belt and be like, all right, I'm gonna fuck this guy up with like as many different submissions as I can, you know. So if you have like maybe like a, for him, he would need like a purple belt, but like maybe if he's got a purple belt and like 5 minutes, all right, can I tap this guy 10 times, you know, doing a different move every time, you know, and then kind of just like developing that, like that confidence with like a broader portfolio of submissions, you know? And then, so if you would start by like fucking up white belts, you know, like, all right, I can fuck white belts up with like these like 5 submissions. Okay. and then you get them down like, okay, can I fuck blue belts up with this now, you know, and then kind of take that up the chain. I kind of recommend that, you know, the white belts have to, they got to pay their dues, man.
I feel like my game is, if I go get higher ranker belts, then I turn it up a little bit more. I never set the pace. That's my problem. I let everybody dictate the pace. So if the higher belt, they'll do something more. So I meet it. I never go past it. I always meet it. In tournaments, it's not like that with me. In tournaments, I'm 100%. I go. But for some reason, that classroom setting and...
You're being friendly.
I don't know what... I can't. It's been like that lately, and I just can't shake it. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. How about you, Katie? Are you a killer in the training room, or...
You got along? It's funny. I learned early on that I had great shoulder pressure. And I used that pretty much all the time, and made quite a few people tap just from shoulder pressure. So,
really?
Yeah. And I do that to white belts. Yeah, they keep coming back, though, so must be doing something right. Yeah.
What moves sort of, like, clicked in your head early and kind of helped you get better?
Yeah. I mean...
Like, nothing specifically?
No, not really. I mean, just a typical armbar, you know, from mount. Just my pressure, working on that, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. What do you guys want to get good at as you move forward? Just like, what are the holes in your own games?
Oh, man. There's too many holes. Everybody brings out something different than me that I got to work on, you know? And if I work with Jamal, oh, man, I got to work on my leg locks, you know? So it's like, if I work, you know, it's like, it depends who you're working with. It's like, God dang, you know, some people bring out the worst, like my worst habits. I'm like, oh, man, that I don't even see until it's too late. And then, yeah, man. So, I guess leg locks. Guess I got to work on leg locks. Yeah. I get stuck in that 50-50, and then I'm more worried about what's happening to me than instead of playing the game.
I have a theory that leg locks are maybe not necessarily more dangerous, but more menacing, like in your mind.
Yes, I think
because because the limb is farther away from your central nervous system, so you feel like you have less control over it.
Right.
And so it's, you know, kind of easy to be spooked.
Oh, yeah, I guess I get there, and I'm trying to just move the leg. Instead of attacking, the leg's right here, right on me, and I'm just moving my leg, not attacking nothing, just because I want out of there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it takes a lot of courage to just, like, throw your own leg into the party and start partying with, like, a real leg lock expert, you know? I mean, but if you look at the professional grappling circuit, that's the whole game right now.
I mean, I'll do it against people that I don't really know, but when I see that guy that knows what he's doing, I'm like, damn it, I don't want to play this.
Yeah. How about you, Katie? What's next in your development?
Well, probably that, for sure. Just picked up that the other day. I actually started doing some of those leg locks the other day, and I think that's the next I'm going to start working on.
Yeah.
I have a lot of holes in my game, though, so I got lots to work on.
What are they?
Practice my guard. Yeah, really working on... not letting you pass my guard, D. Working on a lot of that. Probably a lot of back takes. Like to focus on that.
Yeah, for me, I kind of suck once I've taken the back.
Yeah.
I'm just not very good at it. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't like it. Especially if I'm like, if they're turtled up and I kind of got them seat belted like this and we're both sat down, I'm okay with that. But if they lean back, then I just got a fucking person on top of me. Like, I don't really see the advantage. It's like, God damn, I just got this fucking big ass motherfucker on top of me. It's like, this isn't really like, I feel like I'm losing, you know?
Yeah,
like,
you know, on that one.
Especially when they're like right on top of you, they're on your fucking lungs. Like, your lungs can't fully inflate. Your lungs are between like the guy and the mat, right? So then off to the side, I just feel like, it's just so easy to keep your head like this, you know? Like, I really could be better about strategically, like, advancing, like, a map of grips, you know? Like, here, two on one, stuff it down, trap it with the leg. Now I got that side open. Now I can choke. But a lot of times I'll just, like, take the blade of my forearm and drive it across their jaw and, like, threaten to break their nose.
That's what I do, man. That's like,
yeah.
But, yeah, like, the... you see people with like really clean back games, you know, like really clean back attacks, and I'm just not there. I'm just, I feel like I'm losing. Like, I feel like I'm drowning if someone's like on top of me like that. So that's definitely one area of improvement that I could really stand to continue to develop. As I've gotten heavier and stronger, my legs are less flexible, and all parts of me have gotten bigger. And the consequence is that it's harder to invert now. And so my guard retention has suffered because of that. And my scrambling has suffered a little bit just because I can't move as quickly as I did before. But also like have less opportunities to scramble because I'm just like shutting people down because I'm stronger, you know. I'd like to continue to get better at the head and at the north-south position.
Right.
I'm tapping a lot of people out with it right now in practice, but there's this kind of like this weird adjustment that you have to make where you just like drop kind of like the meat of your shoulder into the like into the carotid artery, and you just kind of got to like let your body relax there, and like you can like feel when it's right and you can feel when it's not right, you know. And I'm kind of like got to like play around with that position.
What is that, a little bit. Arm choke from north south? Is that what you're doing?
No, just naked. Just put their chin in your armpit and then kind of wrap their head up like here. So their head would be like over here,
right?
And then you just kind of armpit right under, right to the Adam's apple. And so this arm here will be wrapping around and cutting off the carotid artery on that side. And then on the other side, you're just dropping your shoulder down. But you have to drop it down really perfectly. You have to kind of like,
right.
You have to kind of just like relax, really. It's kind of like the one-handed head and arm choke.
Right, right.
Where you don't lock it up. You just kind of go like this and use the friction on the mat to keep them there and then just kind of drop yourself. Gosh, what else? Also, just like my attacks off my back, like my sweeps are really good, but my submissions off my back haven't really been like super successful. You know, I've been like probably mostly just like sweeping people instead of just like really like attacking them, like really submitting them off my back. So those are some things that I want to work on. You know, for me, that's sort of what I think like my next level of jiu-jitsu is. And then like finally just like slowing it down. Like, I'll find myself just, like, going through this whole series and, like, maybe winning the exchange, but looking back, I'm like, fuck, that was sloppy. You know, it's like, oh, like, thank goodness I wasn't rolling with someone that could have, like, really caught me there, but I just did, like, three sloppy moves, you know, and I got away with it, you know, and I'm kind of starting to realize, like, oh, wait, that was sloppy.
Yeah, that's what I've been trying to do. I've been trying to be cleaner in my techniques. Get there, wait a second, and let it sink in. That was my biggest issue. Because before I would get there, and if I didn't find it, I'd pass it to the next one. Right away, if I don't have it, I'm passing to the next one. But it was no good technique. It was just, I got there, and I didn't finish nothing, you know, because it was sloppy. So I just moved to the next technique. But now I'm being a little more patient, waiting, looking for a little more options, a little more grip playing. That's one thing, using more grips that I've been using more. Because before, I would just grab the wrist. Full arm lockups. No, not really grabbing no grips.
Hey, there's something to be said for that. I mean, you don't want to skip no gi. Like, there's something to be said for that. Like, there's, that's important too.
Right.
But yeah, knowing the grips is important too. My hangnails just start ripping off my entire. Like, yeah. They'll just like, do you get that?
Yeah. I have manly fingers.
Yeah.
And you're feminine.
Yeah. No, it's just in like. You have like these hangnails ripping off of your off the top of your hand, and then you got to like grab all these geese and do your laundry and dunk them into like that water. And you're just like, fuck.
Yeah. It's never happened to me.
Really?
I mean, yeah. I sprained my finger, but like not hangnails.
Oh my god! I get them horrible. Every session.
Yeah.
Yeez. But you guys, your nails are short. That's weird.
Yeah. No, it's just
it's
man.
It's weird. Yeah.
You might just have like tougher skin. So I actually think it's like if you have like these little cuticles, if you push them back, they don't stretch out your hangnails.
Yeah.
But that's what my wife told me, so that's what I've been doing.
Interesting.
Mine are so bad, they're bleeding.
Yeah. Mine bleed like every...
Yeah.
Manny will tell you. He'll see me off to the side. Like everyone that rolled with me has like a bloody gi.
That is disgusting.
Yeah, it is pretty disgusting, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just keeping it savage on the mat.
Yeah.
And Seema, your weightlifting background is bodybuilding, CrossFit, powerlifting.
Yeah.
Just straight weightlifting. What is it like?
I was kind of lucky. I got an injury when I was 12. I don't know if you know what Oshkosh Slaughter is. It's not even an injury. It's kind of like a condition.
That knee issue?
You said you got lucky? You got a knee injury?
No, let me, exactly because of this. When I was 12, I got Oshkosh Slaughter. I was playing soccer. And it hurt so bad that I couldn't run for like two or three, like 2.5 years. Wow. Couldn't start playing soccer again until I was like 15 and a half, 16. So that's when my mom was like, let me get you a gym membership, because I was a super active kid. And I like kind of got depressed because I couldn't do anything. So the next thing was, well, she grabbed some weights for me from the drugstore, and then she got me a gym membership, and I was able to start weightlifting like when I was 13. So I was kind of lucky in that sense, because now, I mean, by the time I was 20, 21, I was really built. Because
8 years of lifting.
Yeah. Right now I'm 25. So that's like 12 years of lifting. And that's partially why I am the way I am, because I was lucky enough to have that experience when I was really young. So with that being said, yeah, it started with bodybuilding, and that bodybuilding was to supplement soccer, the bodybuilding and strength training. I started doing a lot of powerlifting after I stopped playing soccer at Sac State. So that was around 19 is when I started doing powerlifting. And then it's just been a mix of just a lot of athletic movements, powerlifting, bodybuilding type work, just all together with the jiu-jitsu.
You are still active in both communities?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still, like, I haven't competed in powerlifting in a while, just because, again, I just like competing in jiu-jitsu too much. And I, like, with that being said, I don't really, like, I can't concentrate on strength training. I just have, like, a minimal level of strength that I want to maintain as I do jiu-jitsu, so that I can just make sure I'm keeping that as I improve on the mats. And then with bodybuilding, I can't compete in that for years, just because if you have to get that lead to be on stage, it's depleting. You feel weak. You don't want to do jiu-jitsu because, I mean, you're so lean already, and it's just, yeah, it doesn't supplement athleticism by any means.
It's still, like, its own thing.
It really is. It's like, I still like coach a lot of bodybuilders, but I do not have that type of hunger that I used to have for the stage, because it doesn't meet the type of athletic work that I want to do.
Yeah.
For myself, at least. Yeah.
So you're, as you're active in both communities, right? Like, do you ever feel like, oh, you want to like hang out with your bodybuilder buddies, but you got to like run the jiu-jitsu, and they're like, no, come, like,
yeah.
Come hang out with us.
Yeah. No, I train at a gym called Super Training. Do you know?
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. Ryan Spencer?
I know Ryan Spencer. I was just with him this weekend at the Arnold.
Okay.
So
he's my guy.
I train there, and
you keep talking, I'm gonna get another beer.
Yeah, it's all good. So since I've been training jiu-jitsu a lot more, I've been training, but I haven't been to Super Training as much. So they're just always on me for not being at ST as much. They just blame it on my girlfriend, but it's mainly because I'm training jiu-jitsu a lot, and like the time constraints aren't what they used to be. So yeah, I mean, I'm still active when it comes to like putting out content and stuff like that for like social media purposes, because that's what I do. But they do see me missing from there quite a bit.
Have you brought any people over from that sport
to the dark side?
There are a few that have wanted to. There, because, okay, so since I've been doing jiu-jitsu, like I've posted my progress on like YouTube and IG and stuff. So there are a lot of people from like the community that have started jiu-jitsu because they see that like I can still stay strong, I can still stay pretty big athletic while doing BJJ. But from Super Training, there are a few guys that want to. Even Mark has mentioned that he wants to get into grappling.
No shit.
I don't think it's because of me, but it's like he's wanted to do it, but not from ST, not directly from that gym. Yeah.
Mark, is he getting up there?
What do you mean, in terms of weight?
Age?
Or
both?
In age, of course. Yeah. In weight, nah, he cut down from, I think, like 300 pounds. Now he's 240.
Okay, so we got up there for a little bit.
He was up there. Yeah, he tore his pec, and then he was like, okay, well, let's cut. So yeah, then he cut down. Yeah,
yeah. I was always interested in like how those communities got along, because you know, when I grew up, I grew up playing a lot of like Magic the Gathering, which is this like card game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I did for a little while. It's like I grew up doing Shotokan karate, Magic the Gathering, and surfing. Like, that was it. Like, there was nothing else.
That's an interesting mix.
Yeah. And I was, for myself, I was like, man, wouldn't it be great if my Magic the Gathering buddies could get along with my Shotokan buddies? And so I tried to like get them all to hang out, and they're like, who are these weird? Like, you know, as you start realizing like the scenes, like, people like to stay in their own little enclaves, and they're kind of like, oh, why are you going out and hanging out with those people? You know, why are you kind of leaving the scene? So I was curious, for a guy like you who's like so active in like the strength community here.
Yeah.
And then there's like rifts in between scenes too. So I was just like one of the guys who is sort of like socially in my circles is a Delta weightlifting guy.
Delta weightlifting.
And they're like an Olympic lifting.
Okay.
They're an Olympic lifting
guy. Yeah.
And so I was like, this fucking guy is like huge. He wants to, you know, you ask him, he's going to be an Olympian. Mm-hmm. This guy is fucking so built. He's dating one of the fighters at the gym, and I'm good friends with the fighter. And so we're all out just like hanging out socially. And I was like, so you're a big weightlifting guy. And he's like, yeah, Olympic lifting. And I was like, well, do you ever go to like super train and train with those guys? You know, you guys are all weightlifters, right? And he's like, fuck no, those guys are pussies. You know, he didn't say that.
Yeah,
no. Like, fuck no, we don't. Yeah. But he was like, he's just explaining it to me. It's like, no, they don't get along. You know, uh-huh. Like we're not that we don't get along, but they're just different animals. So even like within like the small, and you guys will see this too, where like, you know, like even two jujitsu schools are kind of like, yeah, I don't know about those guys.
Yeah.
You know, like those weird random riffs in the community, right? Which is part of what I'm trying to do with this podcast is like, hey, can't we all just, you know, get along? But yeah, what's the deal with like the weight, with the power lifters and the Olympic lifters?
Dude, no, it's so funny. There's risk between all of those types of lifting sports. When I came into super training, they knew me because of bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. They didn't know me as a power lifter, even though I did strength sports. So like they would always bag on me. They're like, oh, you lean ass bodybuilder, blah, blah, blah. Because like a lot of powerlifters aren't necessarily that lean. They get big. Some of them get too big. And some of them, it's not everyone, you know, but that's what the stereotype of powerlifters are like the fat powerlifter. Bodybuilders are the narcissistic, self-centered bodybuilders. Weightlifters are just the super athletes that are like, some of them are lean, some of them are fat, but like it's true, pure weightlifting. So when it comes to like weightlifters and powerlifters, I think that the communities are getting a little bit better because like a lot of powerlifters are now wanting to do weightlifting and thriving because they're so strong with the bench and deadlift and the squat. Yeah. And the communities are getting a little bit better together, but every sport's going to think theirs are the best. Bodybuilders look at powerlifters and they're like, oh, those fat, nasty powerlifters. You know what I mean? Even though they can benefit a lot from powerlifting training. It's true.
Yeah,
you know, powerlifters look at bodybuilders and it's rough. Like, even martial arts too, man. Like, jiu-jitsu versus, like, other martial arts. Like, okay, this is one thing that I found really interesting when I started jiu-jitsu. When I started rolling, and it's not people from Casio school, but just a lot of what I noticed, Jiu-jitsu has an interesting thing of looking down on strength.
Right? Yeah.
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 You know, you knew exactly what I meant too. Like after a while I try not to use as much strength, but
you like get accused of it.
You're like, oh, you're using too much strength.
That's the worst thing when someone tells you. When someone says, you're strong. Oh, that's one thing that
you're like, bro,
you're really strong.
I hate that.
Like, and you were talking about that too with the shoulder pressure too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, if you strength train, you're going to have a much better game. You're going to be that much better. Yeah. But it's like, yes, I get the technique aspects of things, but like if you put two high-level black belts together, both 180 pounds, both the same level of technique, but one is stronger than the other, I mean, yeah, it could, like if they did 10 matches, the guy that's a little bit weaker could get, I think, maybe three because of gets him something. But typically that guy that's a bit stronger with the same level of technique is going to win, you know? So it's just... It's interesting to me, you know. That's why I try, like when I roll, I don't use a lot of strength first off because I know I have that, but I definitely want to focus on technique, just like all of us do.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think that people don't realize that a lot of strength is in sort of like the architecture of your bones, and is like you can't not use it, right? So, mm-hmm. like that shoulder pressure that you were talking about, that comes from having your hips angled right so that your hips are kind of like up one way and your shoulders are coming down one way, and so all your weight's going down on that on that shoulder, and that's really more about like the levers that you're creating with your bones and not really about like squeezing real tight with big muscles, you know. When you like walk your fingers on the mat to you use the friction, you know, to like help you like pry someone's arm off their body, that's not like you're just like squeezing them real tight either. You're using your bones to make levers. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, what are you going to do? Forget how to do that?
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm sorry, I feel strong. I'm sorry, I feel strong. Like I'm making levers with my bones. You should be doing that too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Katie, you're the only woman on the panel tonight. Do you feel supported by most people that you've encountered on the mat? Like any remnants of chauvinism in the jiu-jitsu community at all? What's your experience been?
No, not at all, actually. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I joined jiu-jitsu, because, well, one, I wanted to feel stronger myself and, build my self-confidence, but and actually see other women get on the mat, so that's really awesome. And then we have our women's only class, which is great. So, but no, I don't feel that at all. I joined the adult class and I roll with guys, and it's been pretty awesome, actually.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I started 8 years ago, there was these Armenian dudes that just couldn't stand to get tapped out by like these two girls that we have at our gym.
Yeah.
And I was like, guys, I don't think you really, they've been at this shit for 5 years, you know?
Yeah.
But I think the community's progressed a lot. Even in, well, 8 years is a long time, but I was just kind of curious in getting your perspective on that, you know?
I mean, there's times where I can tell if I'm rolling with a guy that he's a little bit easier on me, and
Do you want him to go easier on you?
No, I mean,
you don't want the full knee on belly from someone my size.
No,
right? You don't want the full.
I mean, there has been times where I've been hurt, just because they, forget and. But no, I appreciate, I like the time that they take to, if they're a higher ball, whatever, and show me, a proper way to do something or a different way to do something. But no, they're not always easy on me. I mean, at least I hope not.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. So for your view, just go whatever pace you're going to go
at.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to go hard.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's a, there's a spectrum, my wife, I got my wife to do it with me.
Nice.
Yeah. I got her to do it twice and she's, I think, done.
At least you got two out of it.
Yeah, I got two out of it. But that's, that's okay. It's not, I mean, but for, she's got her nails are a little bit longer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She is totally, she doesn't like germs. She doesn't like, she works in a lab, so she knows just how many germs are everywhere. She doesn't like germs. She doesn't like sweaty men. She doesn't like men without rash guards. She doesn't like the thought of even being underneath them. She was like, God, Jabron, you don't understand what I went through. I had this guy's hair in my mouth. I pulled it out of my mouth. I was like, oh, baby, that's not, wait till it's a pubic hair.
Oh, yeah.
Pulled out of your mouth, It's like, you have no idea,
Or sweat drips into your mouth.
Yeah, yeah. But there's there's this, I think there's a spectrum of hardiness.
Yeah.
Across both genders.
Yeah.
But for me as a man, I feel like it's probably easier to talk my male buddies and come on, dude, do you have you try to get your girlfriends into it and be like, oh, I don't know, more of a girly girl.
I just don't ask. Some of the women that I know for a fact won't do it.
Okay,
I just avoid it all. I've tried to get a few women to join and they say yeah I'll come, and then they never show up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of them don't really want to get sweaty and roll with guys, so I try to get them to come to the women's classes still. Then they just don't want to get sweaty.
Yeah that's fair. Do you feel like you can meaningfully defend yourself from a stranger on the streets yet?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. My confidence has increased so much.
Yeah, because he could before he even started.
No. Which is funny. Like I could.
Which is funny because I wonder I was, you must have just started for the love of it, because who's gonna attack you?
Nah, dude. Like she said, and I'm now so confident that typically someone's not gonna come after me, right? Yeah. But if someone that they knew what they were doing, mm-hmm. really wanted to, if a black belt came at me on the street for some reason,
sure.
And it was a few years ago, I'd really get my ass beat. No matter how big I am, I get my ass beat. I still might now if it was a black belt, but I'm a little bit more confident that I'm not just some big guy. If I needed to, I could defend myself. I could defend some of the people around me if necessary. That confidence is actually there. And I feel really good about that, So, yeah. And it's also cool, were you in the generation of Dragon Ball Z?
Yeah.
Like when I was younger, I wanted to be big like Goku. But now it's like I want to be big and I want to be able to fight like Goku. You know, like it's sick. So
yeah. Do you guys grow up watching like martial arts flicks or stuff like that? I did a lot, like Samurai Jack and
Samurai Jack. Oh, that was such a good show.
That last season that they put out was amazing. And then like, do you ever watch the Boondocks?
Yes,
all those fight scenes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh my god, when he fought the blind grandpa. Oh my god, do you guys ever watch that show?
Boondocks was great. You guys
god, what a fucking show for everyone listening to. So the Boondocks is it's like a socially conscientious Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Yeah. So it's a
cartoon.
Yeah, it's a cartoon. It's based on off the comic strip, but it's basically a Fresh Prince because these kids, I think their parents die, so they got to go live with their grandpa, you know, in, I think the fictitious town's like Crestville or Whitesville or something like that. And so you have all these like kind of like urban sensibilities and like in a really upper class suburban neighborhood. And so they're like, and they're children. So they're like really earnest and honest, and they're from like an urban setting and a suburban setting. And so it's like a really good platform for social commentary, you know? But it's kind of like, I don't know where the hip hop kung fu, like cultural exchange happened, but it's fucking there, right? Like Wu-Tang and 36 Chambers. Like, I don't know where that whole cultural exchange happened. Like, I would love to get to the root of it. Like as an amateur sociologist.
I think the age group with those guys, you know, but cause those guys are older, you know, they're in their 40s and at that time, Bruce Lee and all those things, that's what you're watching.
Yeah.
That's what I think. Old Van Damme movies and Van Damme movies, man.
Let me touch on that real quick on the Van Damme thing, because Van Damme recently, I'm at Team Alpha Male.
I heard about that. Him and so, Cody.
Yeah, Van Damme recently kicked Cody Garbrandt on accident, and Cody was upset. Cody had just been concussed, so he was upset, but he didn't look gracious on camera. Uh-oh. You know, but. I mean, who would after just getting kicked in the face by Van Damme? So I feel like it's kind of no one's fault. But my buddy Amir had an interesting take on it. Amir is a immigrant from Iran. He came here when he was like 20, you know, he came here when he was like 16. He's like 23 now. And he was like, man, when I saw that, I was like, damn, Cody, you need to chill. You just got kicked in the face by Van Damme. That's like a fucking honor. He's like, you have no... He was like, man, Cody is like 1/10 as famous as Van Damme. He's like, no one in Iran knows who Cody is. Wow. You know? Like, everyone in Iran knows who Van Damme is. You go to Thailand, they know who Van Damme is. You know, you go to, like, Russia, they know... You know,
I might have lighted him up just to be as famous as he was.
The idea that, like, Van Damme has to come in here and, like, be all humble and kind of like, oh, I'm sorry. It's like, fuck... Like, Van Damme is, like, a fucking transgenerational cultural megastar across continents, across cultures, you know? And for him to, like... For him to humble himself before Cody is kind of ridiculous, actually. He was saying that in, not my words, Cody, not my words, Amir's words, but he was saying that like in Iran, they have like a nickname for Van Damme, like Ricky or something. They call him Ricky because he played a guy named Ricky in a movie or something. And so now everyone in, it's like a cultural trope, like, oh, you just did like a Ricky move. Like you just did something badass. Like he's that, like he just has that level of like penetration into the hearts and minds of people. You know what I mean? Damn. Yeah, it's crazy, man. Like you,
I don't know if I let him kick me though. Shit.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah.
If you're on the end of that kick, you're like, I don't know about this shit. Would you let him kick you?
Well, they were play sparring. You know, they were play sparring, and it's hard to, you know, it's hard to manage distance and shit. But I also don't know what it's like to get kicked after just being concussed. You know,
find that clip.
Yeah, I think I got concussed like a month ago. I was at the Saturday morning boxing sparring and I got hit real hard, and I haven't felt right since, honestly. Kind of a little bit of mental fog, a little bit of vertigo, which I was having vertigo, but it like came back. It like knocked all the fluid in my ear around.
Yeah, you know? So I don't put on the glove no more at all, man. It's like one hit now lasts a few days.
Yeah. 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 Do you guys ever do any striking arts? Or
I've wanted to. Now it's, well, I still want to.
Yeah, just do it lightly. Yeah. You don't have to go in there and kill you.
Yeah. No, I've been wanting to try out a lot.
Like good luck getting training partners.
Nah, you got to with the mitts, man.
Yeah. You're going to have to pay people to spar you, man. You're going to have to be like Floyd, like bringing guys in.
Well, I'm totally fresh. So that's the first time a place to train. We got to find some people who, like, I don't know where to go for that here, but I know there's a bunch of places somewhere in SAC.
Alpha Male.
Alpha Male. I have my answer.
We got a big guy. Luke Brewer would be good for you. You're 5'10"?
6'1".
Fuck, man.
Wow. Jesus.
God, you're just so big. You look stocky. Luke Brewer could be good for you because Luke Brewer is about 6'3". He's skinnier. Snap.
Yeah.
He's probably skinnier.
Has really like long reach.
Yeah, he's a wire. You know what I mean?
That's dope.
Yeah, Luke, like you and Luke could kind of do some like work. And then Angelo would be a stretch. Angelo is like 200, 5'11", you know what I mean? But he really knows what he's doing, you know what I mean? Alpha Male would be the place to go, but man, it's going to be hard. You'd have to go to Golden Glory up in Alistair Overeem's team.
Why that?
Oh. Yeah. Well, those are all big guys. You know, all those Dutch kickboxers, man.
There you go, bro. Sign up and head out.
You'd have to go to one of those Scandinavian countries.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Get like some of those big guys, you know.
I just got to learn first before I think about that. But no, I definitely want to.
Yeah.
I want to get good at stuff like that. Like a lot of different martial arts along with lifting. That's the goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys, when you started Jits, was it like a... was it like a total lifestyle change? Like immediately, did it just kind of creep up on you? Was it still not?
It crept up on me, man, because I didn't realize what I was really doing. I got to wrestle with somebody and maybe I finished them, maybe I didn't finish them, but I went home and never even thought about it until I started training real jiu-jitsu and then wanted to talk to people about it, but nobody wanted to hear it because nobody else did it, you know? So it's like, I was just me and one buddy, that's all we do.
Then you start finding more jiu-jitsu friends and then
it's just like, it's hard to have, like, I've tried to get my friends to sign up. They do it for a week. It's just not for them. You know, it's not for everybody. But the ones that do stick to it, man, we have, like, our own conversations for hours about, like, what'd you learn today? What'd you learn for today, you know? And that's about it. But, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
For me, it wasn't until I think I did my first competition. And then it was, oh, I'm in love. I need to drill. I need to practice. And then, yeah, I was in the gym every day. So... definitely lifestyle change for sure.
Yeah. I definitely think the biggest part that I really love about jiu-jitsu is like it's been a long time since I've actually been new at something. Like I've lifted for a long time. Like I've been working like with athletes when it comes to lifting for a long time. So it was a long time since I've been like, I don't know what I'm doing at literally anything that I do. And when I went on the mats the first time and I was just like lost. And then when I got my like first month or so, I just got put down by this black belt, 140, 50 pounds or something like that, 6 times in 6 minutes. I was just like, I really like this. Like I don't hate it.
But you can see its power.
I can see its power. It is like a superpower that, and it's like, it's really, for me, it's really fun to be new at something. And I understand that 3 years from now, it's still gonna be new. There's still going to be so many things that I need to learn that even when I'm a black belt, there's just going to be so many things I still have to continue to figure out. And that puzzle, that novelty is what I really enjoy about it. You know, it's changed just a lot of the ways I look at other things I do in my life too. So it's really awesome.
Yeah. That thing you touched on about it changing your perspective on other things in your life has been sort of like a touchstone for me because, you know, doing it for 8 years now, I kind of like use this like analogy, like when you're surfing, because I grew up surfing. And so when you're surfing, you can't find an anchor point on the water because everything's moving on the water. You got to look to the land and be like, okay, I'm in front of that house. I'm in front of that lifeguard station. And so if you like stray one way or the other, you know, you're getting into a current and you got to like get back to in front of that house, you know? And so like, jiu-jitsu has been like a good anchor point as like interpersonal relationships, friendships come and go, you know, personal and professional successes and failures come and go, you know, personal achievements and personal other things that you wish you would have done better kind of come and go. And you can kind of just after a while feel like you're in the open ocean, just kind of swimming. You're like, fuck. Especially as you get into your 30s, you're like, oh my God, what am I doing here? Like, I'm just kind of showing up to work every day. What's the point of it all, you know?
Yeah.
But then you kind of like see steady advancement in in this thing that you've applied yourself to, and it sort of like grounds you a little bit. It's like, okay, if I just kind of keep chugging along, I'll get better. You know what I mean? Or you're kind of like sucking ass at jujitsu, and but you're doing good in other areas of your life. And yeah. So they kind of ground you in a weird way, you know? Mm-hmm. Everyone should have a hobby.
Oh yeah,
everyone should have a hobby, you know? I ask people like at work sometimes, what do you do for fun? And they're like, oh, well, I have 3 kids. You know? Like that's, I give them my life. I have nothing for myself. Katie, I'm sorry. No. I mean, no, it's good. Yeah. You made your kids do jujitsu.
We do it together. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, my kids are my hobby, but we do jujitsu together. So.
Yeah. So you find a way to like develop yourself exactly. While you're, that's so important.
Exactly. We do it together. Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah. My kids can throw better arm bars than myself. And jokes.
Yeah. Have you gotten any of them skateboarding?
You know, and my son is just not coordinated enough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but they all have skateboards. My girls are probably better at it than my son, actually.
If you ever want to see young kids doing, this is not a good sales pitch for skateboarding, but if you ever want to see young kids, like, in being total degenerates, take them to a skate park. Yeah. There's, like, kids skipping school and smoking weed there at the skate park and, like, kind of, like, you know, talking smack. But skateboarding is an interesting exercise, I think, for children. If I ever have children, they'll always try and introduce them to it. Yeah. Because what you get an opportunity to kind of expose them to fear gradually and that's like true. Let them like really like let them do like real high flying things before fear metastasizes in the back of their mind. So if you go to a skate park, some of the most proficient people you'll see there just flying and doing crazy stuff is kids who have not let fear set in yet. And they're just, I mean, it's incredible. When I grew up and I was hanging out at the skate park, the fear took over me. I never really got that talented. But man, one of these kids, he would jump into the half pipe with no shoes, like shorts, no knee pads, no helmet. Oh, and he would just be like 10 feet in the air over the half pipe coming down. The half pipe itself is 13 feet tall, you know?
Wow.
And just like no fucks given, you know? And, I mean, he had no concept that he could fall. It was just not in the realm of possibilities, you know? And you can like really... It's just so interesting in children. You can really watch the children who just like have not let that fear like kind of like penetrate their brain yet and like how far they can go with that, you know? Even more so than jujitsu, because like jujitsu will sort of like temper you because you have like a push there, mm-hmm. like someone pushing back. But when it's just you versus like the ramp or like in surfing, it's the same thing. Like you get like little kids. I was in Hawaii with my wife recently. You got like little kids kind of like paddling out to like 7 foot surf.
Nice.
And it's like, man, dude, you're 80 pounds. You know? That's interesting. Like, I would recommend that for children. Even if it's just like kind of like having them go fast on the skateboard, it's kind of cool. Like a really interesting tool to kind of like help them kind of like confront fear and gradually expose themselves to fear. You know, better than any I've encountered. Where are you guys in 3 years? Did you want to touch on that point?
Just a quick thing on that. My friend of mine, Charlie Zamora, I have no kids, by the way. I plan on to later, obviously. But he was talking about gymnastics. And the reason why like I thought that was such a smart idea is because when you look at these gymnasts that go into other athletics, even wrestling or lifting, they have such good body awareness.
Yeah.
And then the thing that you're talking about when it comes to like fear, like these kids are doing flips through the air and all mm-hmm. stuff like that. But I have like when I really thought about it, I've never seen any other athlete have the type of body awareness that a gymnast has, the type of just pure body strength that a gymnast calisthenics type athlete has. And to develop that later in life is super difficult. But that's why they start kids so young, they just end up being freak athletes and whatever else they do. So, just something to think about.
My littlest is definitely a gymnast. She'll climb up the tall ropes and twist back down. She's incredible when it comes to stuff like that. Drop the splits in the middle of the floor, just anywhere random. She's,
yeah,
definitely.
Okay,
it helps surfer with jiu-jitsu as well.
Yeah,
so for sure.
Yeah,
that's super cool. Mm-hmm. Is like jiu-jitsu convenient for you? Said it's only 2 miles away from here.
Yeah, man.
It's convenient for you.
It's convenient.
Is it pretty convenient for you, or is it like do you guys know Joy Pendle? She's a purple belt, probably soon to be brown belt. She's she's real good.
Yeah.
She's a beekeeper by day. She runs a bee. They sell the queens. They don't sell the honey.
Right.
I guess the East Coast is set up for honey, and she sells the queens. And you know, we're having this problem with all these bees dying.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm actually, I mean, I never, I'm guessing that's actually good for business for her because she sells the fucking bees. But
yeah.
But yeah, her thing is beekeeping, but she does that up in Stonyford. So she's an hour and a half away. So to get on the map for a 90-minute session, she drives in at 90 minutes down and 90 minutes up. So it's like a two times, whatever her time commitment on the mat is, she's spending twice as much time driving. Wow. You know, you live 2 miles away. I live a mile and a half away.
Starts at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm heading out to wherever my job may be, and then driving back. You know, so
how far are your jobs, man?
It depends. You know, sometimes we're in West Sac, sometimes from Roseville to West Sac.
That's okay.
Sometimes
that's
not over too here bad. Tower Inn.
Do you ever have to go to the Bay?
No, we don't do that. When I lived in the Valley, I was driving to the Bay Area every day. I was to Los Altos from Las Banas. That's about almost 90 miles each way.
Oh, my God. And
that's why I wasn't training as much at that time, because I'm like, shit, it's 6 o'clock.
How could you?
Yeah, it was the hardest thing for me.
Yeah,
and then now it's like, man, I have an hour now. When I get home, I have an hour to get ready. That's like, yeah.
It's a luxury?
Perfect. Yeah, it's perfect, man.
Yeah.
That makes me get in there more. No excuse.
Yeah, yeah. How about you too? Pretty convenient, or
for me, yeah. No, it's convenient. Like, what I do is it's online, so I don't necessarily have to go. I can work from anywhere, so I can. It's convenient. I can make it work.
Nice, yeah. Nice. How about you, Katie?
Well, I have a key, so I can go whenever.
Oh, easy, easy. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm there all the time. So.
Yeah, yeah. I'm interested in just kind of like mapping out like the people that I meet. For the most part, the folks that I've seen have real success in it are folks who have been able to like conveniently like make it a part of their daily life. You know, if it's like a huge stretch, it's the hardest thing to yeah. You know, where are you guys like a year and 5 years from now? Is this like kind of like a like developmentally wise, are you when do you guys see yourselves as ready for the purple belt? I know it's probably not like the best question to ask, but
yeah, I don't even look at
are
that.
Are you still rolling a year from now?
Yeah, or? I'm 100% rolling, and whatever happens, happens. You know, I'm just trying to focus on me and getting better. That's it. All that belt stuff, I used to think about it when I was a couple years in, and now I'm like, ah, whatever, you know. Someone else will see that in me, and let me just focus on me right now.
Yeah.
So that's about it.
Yeah. For me, like, when it comes to, like, looking at when I want my belts, I leave that to Casio, obviously. I don't worry about that anymore. But for me, I see jiu-jitsu as a real type of athletic outlet because I've been doing some type of competition all my life. So that's why I loved it so much, because it allows me to really compete and test myself. And that's why I really want to get to a high level of it, even though I started when I was like 22. So that's why for me, I watch guys like Hodger Gracie, because he does a lot of like, he's super technical, but his stuff is, it seems basic, but it's perfection of the basics. And yeah, that's the way
it's really just in the setups.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really in the setups.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to be doing jiu-jitsu for the rest of my life at this point. I haven't found something that I love this much when it comes to sport, but
yeah.
I want to be competing at a high level in it.
You guys are all like pretty set on competing.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I don't know if I like it. I just show up and I don't even know. Like, I feel like I want to, but then why am I doing this? But then I get there, I'm like, oh, this is why. But
yeah,
everything else, I talk to one of the other instructors, like, I don't know why I'm signing up for this crap.
Yeah.
But then I get there, and I'm like, oh, I'm good now, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do you guys take losses?
I take them bad, man. I take them bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate seeing what it looks like when I lose. Like, my reaction, like, oh, what an asshole that guy is.
Yeah, my last competition, my wife was like, I got triangled. My wife was like, well, I got it on video.
Yeah, I got armbar my last one. I stood up, and the referee waved off. He let go, and I'm throwing my hands up in the air, like, God, mad at myself, not the other guy. But, yeah, it's just shitty loser.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like losing, obviously, either, but, you know, it's a learning experience, and take that back to the mats and drill it 10 times, 20 times, 30 times until I get it right, you know, and just keep going, keep pushing myself. I don't like to compete either, but I do it,
yeah.
You know, because I do think it builds character and makes me stronger and builds my confidence. So yeah, keep doing it, man.
Yeah, I don't particularly love competing.
Yeah.
For me, like, when it comes to competition, my only loss came from points. It was like 1-0. And I was against a wrestler. We both weren't going down. They gave it to him because apparently he was going for more takedowns. So they gave him that point at the end.
So was it a vanish crap?
Yeah, but it's still a loss. I should have been doing more. You know what I mean? But I get tapped in training, you know? And I've learned not to let that get frustrating, because that's getting tapped a lot in training is going to allow me to be able to compete well. And I don't get mad at it. It might be very frustrating, especially like I said, last 2 weeks ago, get tapped three times in one single match. It was a little frustrating, but at the same time, it just lets me know that there's a lot I need to work on. So, yeah, I think getting choked on a weekly basis is really just, I don't know how it's affected me. It's definitely been something good. I don't know how, but I was thinking about it. I'm like, it's rare for you to, you know, you're putting yourself in a situation where your life's not really on the line, but you could die.
Right.
Yeah. Right? You know, they're not going to kill you, but you could die. You know, I think that kind of changes us somehow. I don't know how.
No, I think it does too. I think it totally tells you, like, you're just more like aware of danger around you, I think.
Yeah,
maybe.
Absolutely.
You know? Like, I don't know. Like, my wife probably thinks I like fly off the handle a little bit too often and all. But I'm just like, you know, because I'll always take it to the worst case scenario. And for me, it's always like, how's that guy going to defend himself? You know, so like, if we're out at the bar or just out socially and like, maybe someone's making a scene, I'm like, baby, what's that guy gonna do if like this other guy stomps him out? What's that guy gonna, like, does he have a plan for the homie stomp out? There's like four people he's cussing at. And she's like, honey, you're being unreasonable. I was like, I'm not being unreasonable. He thinks he's like immune to fucking being stomped out, you know? Like, what's he gonna do when he gets stomped the fuck out? And she's like, honey, no one's gonna get stomped out. I was like, yeah, well, no one ever does until they do.
Yeah,
that's
true.
I don't know. I feel like that's like, one of the things that's changed in my mind is like, fuck, what would I do right now, you know? And so if I have no plan for the stomp out, if there's like 10 of them, like, be cool, man. Like, Joe Rogan talks about this too. It's like, people that have no idea about martial arts are like so brave, right?
Oh man, I see that all the time, especially some of my friends, you know, because they don't train. And
well, I'm a street fighter.
We all, yeah. Right. My buddy was getting his hair cut and the barber telling him, oh, you train? He's like, oh, that's cool, you roll? Yeah, I prefer standing up, you know, that's what guys say. He goes, yeah, my hands do all the talking. And he goes, you box? Man. He goes, you box? So no, I just fight. They're like, what do you mean? You never box. You never put on. How do you know you could fight, man? You know, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Can't.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We're at about an hour. A little bit over an hour. Thanks for coming by. Closing thoughts. Where can we find you guys online if you want to be found online? Shout outs, whatever.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. I appreciate. You know what, Katie? You're so easy to deal with. Thank you for making the time. I know it wasn't easy for you to get down here. I bumped someone else to get you on. But I'm glad that I bumped them. And let me just take a moment to riff on this, because this lady was like, well, I'm a blue belt. I can come by. And I was like, great. And she's like, what's the podcast about?
Whoa.
I'm like, fuck, watch an episode.
Damn it.
Why would you be like, watch a fucking episode, see if it fits with what you want to do.
Yeah.
Why would you be so narcissistic as to just want to get in front of a mic and not know what the fucking context is?
Yeah.
And this is like, well, what time is it? It's Thursday at 6. I was like, well, okay. Well, just let me know when, you know, just let me know. She's like, okay, well, I want to do it. And so the next day I'm like, okay, so we're on. And she's like, well, I train Thursday at 6. And she's like, all right, dude, fuck, I got someone else. You know, I just, god damn, you know. But thank you, because I know it wasn't easy for coming on. And thank you for being this engaged in the podcast. And, sure. You know, for everything you do at Health Gracie.
Yeah.
That gym is an institution in our community. I have been to probably no less than like 50 open mats.
Wow.
And I haven't given Manny one dime of my fucking money. Like, he just opens this place up to the community like that. Like,
pretty proud of that guy.
Yeah, okay. Fuck, man. And then like the stuff they do for Parents Night Out and like the charity events. You know what I mean? Like, that should be the model for jiu-jitsu. It's like, how do we make a gym a platform to like bring the community together? Kind of like all schools welcome.
That's one thing, you know, that I love about being involved in this business is that is that I've seen so many different people come together. And I have friends at so many different gyms, and I don't sense any animosity between anybody, and everybody seems to be well respected. And that is one thing that I have to say that I appreciate, and the family that I have gained, it's huge.
Yeah, yeah, no, Manny's always just been like, oh my God, like what, you know, you train over there, that's cool. He's never been like, oh, come train with me. If you want to come train, you know, yeah, if you don't want to, no, don't pressure. Come, you know, but I mean, there's other like old school schools I would like never have you, or they'd be like, oh, why are you training with those faggots, you know, like, yeah, you know, like they old school, you know, schools, sure, might say that, but the environment that's been created at that school is something special. I encourage everyone to check it out.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thanks. Yeah, man, thank your podcast too, man, because you give us an inside look at different academies, and I love that shit. I like seeing what's going on, how they're training, their methods, you know. I mean, I heard one episode, and I went back and listened to every single one because I was impressed with it, you know. So thank you for having us on here, you know.
Yeah.
And I just want to give a shout out to Darren and Cassio, you know, representing Wernick Jiu Jitsu.
Who's Darren?
Darren, it runs the Roseville family.
Okay. He's one of Cassio's black belts.
Yeah, he's one of Cassio's black belts.
I gotta get up there sometime.
He's a professor, man. You got it.
He's a man. Want
some good talk about business for Sacktown Talk? That's what
really?
I have.
He's a guy.
Man, he's an intellect.
Yeah, really?
He's a sharp dude.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Maybe connect me with him online.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right. Hey, where can folks find you for coaching?
Yeah, it's at breakthebar.com. That's my website for coaching, and then I'm on Instagram and YouTube at the Natty Professor.
The Natty Professor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
Thank you.
All right, guys. It's been another episode. Thank you.